Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. It'll be the best 45 minutes of your life, I promise. Doing the right thing since 1952.
This message will self-destruct.
What time is it, Gaza? What time is it, Gaza?
It's time to begin the football weekend.
Let's go, man. Come on. Let's have some fun, man.
This is Dusty and Cam on Football Friday. This is a Football Friday edition of Dusty and Cam in the Morning with Dusty Hara and NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
Tapped by Coors Light. Duck fans, as you power up for game day, grab some frost-brewed Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer. Please drink responsibly.
Dusty and Cam on 1080 The Fan.
Good morning. Happy Friday to ya. Dusty. Cam. Football Friday. And as P1 Jesse says, good morning, fellas. You know what today is, don't you? It's the day after the day before, which I guess would make it the day before.
Or the day of.
Yeah. Hey, congrats to all of the high school football teams still dancing in the playoffs.
Yeah, baby. It was a Sweet 16 last weekend. Now it's dwindled down.
Well, it depends on who...
Or what state you're in. I apologize. Well, it depends on your area or
what
district.
What level you're in, too, sure. In the state of Oregon.
Yes.
Because we have some 4A schools in our area that are in the semifinals. Mm-hmm. So congrats to Banks, Gladstone, and I think we have a few P1s in Seaside in that area still, which we don't get that far, but they live on the outskirts enough to where they barely pick us up and listen.
On a clear day or on a cloudy day? Isn't it better on a cloudy day, isn't it? Is that how they power up the station, the antenna?
I believe social media has told me they listen in the firehouse on the app.
Nice.
So what's up, guys in Seaside?
What up?
But those three are all playing in the 4A semifinals this weekend, and Marshfield is the other one in there from Coos Bay. And then you have quarterfinals for 5A, 6A, and then your quarterfinals up in Washington too, correct?
Yes, there are.
And a lot of those games played
the road
tomorrow,
to the Wooden Dome. God, that place is a dump.
The Tacoma Dome? Aren't they renovating it for like the last decade?
I don't know. I don't know.
They're doing work, but not much is getting done.
I don't know. That place is sold. I played in it.
Well, yeah. Is that a bad thing, though?
Yeah.
I don't say that about Fenway Park.
I don't. See, I'm against indoor football late in the year. I'm against it.
Why?
I just don't like it.
It levels the playing field.
I know that. I know it's just levels the playing field.
You want it in the mud.
No. I want it in the elements. I think football late in the year should always be played in the elements. But they want to be able to have a lot of fans.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to be able to make it about promotion. Mm-hmm. I get it. Just call me nostalgic. There's nothing better than being able to play. Where is a good neutral field? I don't know. So it's fine.
Tacoma Dome seems
to but they do a good job here in Oregon. They know where to play it.
Yeah, because we don't have anywhere indoors to play.
They do a good job with it because it's outdoors.
Yeah, the only problem that we have here that people in Washington, it's kind of a good thing, is that in Oregon they try to make it fair by you don't know where you're playing
just
until
randomly
like
just boop, there
the
it is.
Week of. Because there's confusion on as to where these games are being played at because they want to move it to the neutral site. Sometimes the state championship game will be in Corvallis or Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it'll be played at Providence Park.
I think
or at
which
Hillsborough
is the best
Stadium.
Venue. The best venue, Providence Park.
It
should
is.
All, it should be the central focus
yeah, they should just
of all of that.
Put
just
it
all
in
of
one
it.
Place.
Yeah.
Timbers
oh,
don't
no,
really
no,
allow
no,
that,
no.
though. Because they could have playoffs and all that stuff. And
yeah.
Bumping teams out.
Yeah. Oh, but they'll get bumped for a car show.
Yeah. No. That's the Sounders.
That's what I said.
Don't
soccer
you put
got,
that evil.
I said, but the playoff game got bumped for a car show.
Well, no. The Timbers are actually good about it in that they say, you know what? And that's the problem that the OSAA has is that they go, the Timbers said, no, we have this stadium. No matter what, we will kick you out because we're not bumping our playoff game for a high school football game or a car show or anything else, which I think is the right thing to do. But it just makes it a big cluster for teams trying to find out where you're going to play week to week in the playoffs. So congrats to all those high school teams out there.
Yeah, congrats that basketball starting, wrestling starting, and football still going on. Love winter sports. Gosh, I'd be the three-sport athlete. Is it gone?
No.
Is it gone?
No.
I don't know.
You can ask me again. I'll say no
I'm
again.
I'm in fear of this. I have deep, dark fear on the inside.
Here's what you do.
I know, but there's just a sudden, it's like, hey, my favorite thing to do was to think back of that transition of when that sport got over, and you're like, I'm in pretty good shape. I'm in football shape.
Yeah.
No, that's not basketball shape. But then I'm in basketball shape. I'm ready for base. Nope, my arm's going to fall. I loved that. Well, that's gone.
All you need
it's
to
not
do,
all gone, but there's only a few left anymore that's doing it. I don't want to say it's gone, but...
It's a pretty easy fix.
It's the coach's fault. It's all those coaches.
Recommend to your children that they play three sports.
Right.
And then your kids will play three sports.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't really have to worry about it.
You know who's an unbelievable three-sport athlete here?
No.
Damian Lillard.
Yes, I thought you were going to say you.
No, that well. I'm just.
Which is true.
But relevant to the times, Damian Lillard, three-sport star. Football, basketball, and baseball.
Yeah.
How about that?
Do we know what position he played in football and baseball?
Who cares? It would have been good.
No, I'm sure he was. I'm always interested.
I believe he was a
quarterback.
No question. He was
in football, because I know his brother Houston was as well. And then I think in baseball, he said he played in the outfield.
Mm. I'm going to bring back the three-sport athlete and bring it back.
I'm sure there's a lot of kids that still do it now.
Oh, you'd be amazed how that coaches... Yeah. They don't admire it. They don't like it. They will tell you need to commit more to one, and they you to play this and all year. Maybe I'm just old school. Maybe I am. Maybe this ship has got off. But I kind of feel the more you change your body and the more you teach your body to do different movements, it helps you to be a great athlete. I don't think you need to do one singular movement over and over and over and over and over again. I think your body needs to rest. You learn those muscles. You learn different spatial awareness. You learn different ways to change and how the concept of a sport works. Okay, you have to learn baseball. Baseball is a very slow. It's a very methodical. It's a thinker sport. Then basketball, constant change of direction, different types of mindset. Football, cerebral, powerful. Mm-hmm. All these things turn out to be really good for you, yet they will say, you need to concentrate on one. Who are these experts?
The next time that a coach tells that to you, if you're a parent out there, you should ask, why do... like exercise science people, you know, personal trainers will do this, strength and conditioning coaches, all of them say every 6 to 8 weeks that you need to change your workout routine and shock your body.
Absolutely.
And work out different muscle groups.
No question.
Ask them, okay, well then if that's the recommendation by the experts, why should I be doing the same thing over and over again?
It's selfish for coaches. Well, it's selfish for the individual people out there that are trying to train you all year long. I'm not calling them out, but I'm singling them out because they're ruining what it is to be an athlete anymore.
Because it's true. It is. They are selfish. They won't tell you that. They won't tell you that, though, because of the fact that they just want your kid to play their sport, so they're going to get a little cut of it, right? And that's the reality of it is you need different sports. You need to train your body in different ways. And just by playing doing something different, well, you will be training different muscle groups.
What about the experience of being with different teammates? Not the same people play every single sport. If you're a track star, those are different than baseball guys. If you're a golfer in the spring, what about the soccer that you play in the fall? I mean, all these other, if you're a wrestler, you're not a basketball player. All those things you get a chance to experience and do, why would you want to pigeonhole yourself at such a young age into one thing? I don't understand it, and I'll fight against it.
This is something that you know, texter says Scott Frost at Nebraska purposely recruits multi-sport athletes. He thinks it helps him out way more. Urban Meyer is known for doing this. Urban Meyer only offers scholarships to guys that play more than one sport.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it, like I think it's 85% of professional athletes right now played more than one sport.
Football, it's off the charts, crazy. Yes. Baseball is a little bit, and that's the thing, is some of these, you want to give me the quote, the air quotes as I hold this up, it's really good for radio. The quote unquote specialty sport. If I said, Dusty, give me a specialty sport, what would you call that? Swimming?
Yeah. Yeah.
Baseball?
No, baseball is starting to be one. It's just dumb.
It is dumb.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Think of the best athlete that ever came out of your high school. Just think of that guy. Well, it's probably you. But if you think of that guy and you're in your car driving, you sit there and you go, yeah, he was really good at that. Like for me, it's this guy, Ben Petrick, who was first round pick out of high school for the Colorado Rockies. Mm-hmm. Ben was an all-state football player. He was obviously all-state baseball player. And I believe he was an all-league basketball player. and he was the best athlete to ever come out of the high school, and he's a three-sport athlete.
Sure.
And he was really good at all three of them. Like, if you're going to be...
But it wasn't a question for them, for him, right?
I know, but if, yeah. My point is, if you're going to be elite at something, you're going to be elite. Like, you have it in you.
Sure.
You're not going to will yourself and just, like, by specializing in one thing, all of a sudden become this elite athlete.
Well, where's... Do you also think, and this is kind of my gut feeling, is the fear of not being the best of the best for some reason? Like, even if you make it to your level of playing multiple sports at a young age, if you're not part of the best team, or you're just like, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to do it. So I'm just going to go concentrate on what I'm good at. Yeah. It's like saying, okay, I'm really good at kicking the football, but I'm not going to learn how to play other parts. Yeah. Or I'm a really good keeper, but I'm not going to learn to be forward. So I'm just, because I'm not fast enough. So I've given up on that. You give up too quick. We give up way too quick. So we can't. You got to keep fighting through that, because not all of them are going to be stars.
Again,
but you can learn a lot about every single sport.
Again, the funny part about this is that, like, the blame is put on the kids for not fighting through. I'm not saying you, but the blame is usually, oh, the kids don't want to do it. They don't want to compete, the blah, 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 blah. It's the parents. The parents ultimately are the ones guiding them in that direction, telling them, well, your coach said to do this. It's the coaches, it's the adults in the room that are steering them in that direction, which is sad.
The adults. It's also the majority of the adults that never were the star that
are now
running everything. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think that's
the one that was the backup person that said, I never got my chance, Uncle Rico, and I'm going to show all these people how you make these great ones. And I like a lot of them out there. There are a lot of good people that teach a lot of that. I just would hope more and more kids and families try more sports.
All right. Speaking of sports, we're going to have football. It is Football Friday. We've got our football Q&A, P1 shirts on the line. Two of them, one in the 6 a.m. hour, one in the 8 a.m. hour. And hey, if you won your P1 shirt and you came by and you didn't pick it up, was it Nick?
It might have been Nick.
Nick?
We have it for you here.
Text us right now.
Yeah.
Because just send your address, Nick. Wait, no, that's not a good idea. Because then we're just going to get random people doing it.
Yeah, don't do that.
Nick, Buck will find you if you text us, because we have your shirt for you. We're going to be giving away two Dusty Cam I'm a P1 shirts.
My favorite day of the week.
Due to our football Q&A.
Yeah, baby.
Textual relations at 6:30. We're going to give one or more away in the 8 o'clock hour as well. Weekend Would You Rather at 8 o'clock. And our favorite segment of the week outside of football Q&A, Joel Klatt, Fox College football analyst, will join us at 7:30 as well. Right now, let's get the show on the road.
I remember it was just like yesterday.
Mr. Cleland, you should probably plug your ears for this one. 1991, wide right happened. Florida State kicker Thomas misses a 34-yard game-winning field goal opportunity. And the number one Seminoles fall to number two Miami, 17-16.
Oh, I don't care about that. We would have kicked the crap out of that Miami team. Wouldn't even been close. Gino Toretta, really? I say we because
Heisman
I wasn't
Trophy
on.
Winning?
I wasn't Heisman Trophy. Did you watch him play? It was one of the worst Heisman Trophy votes ever.
Well, he won the Heisman Trophy.
It was awful. It wouldn't even been a question. Good. It was an average team, and we ended up getting. Oh, trust me. 3 years later, we shut them up on their home field.
Wow.
58 home winning streak. Gone. Jeez. In Miami. Shut up. Game over.
I don't think that that's accurate.
We shut them up.
No, I believe that part.
Yeah.
But 1991,
yeah.
That game never happened.
Would have.
Good thing we have the BC.
We've been in a whooping.
It started a string of 5 losses in 12 seasons for Florida State against the Hurricanes, where they lost due in part to a missed field goal to win or tie the game. That sucks. All right, where we start? Seahawks, Packers, one team still alive, baby. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. Fire Mark McCarthy. Seahawks beat the Packers 27-24 last night, Thursday Night Football. Fire Mark McCarthy.
Elimination game.
That seems to be the rallying cry from Packer fans this morning.
You think
it's
so?
It's time for Mike McCarthy to go.
Where are you getting that source?
Well,
Twitter.
The great Twitter bots had it all night last night. And I believe it was the very first text we got from Keith in the garbage truck this morning.
It was.
Yes, it is. Fire Mark McCarthy, Keith in the garbage truck, who's noted
Cheesehead.
Green Bay Packers fan. Yeah, and she said, They lost 27-24 to the Seahawks last night.
Great football game. Excellent football game for a Thursday night.
It was.
I wasn't expecting anything dynamic, but what we got was a three-point win by the Seattle Seahawks, perfectly picked by the home team to have that three-point edge.
Yeah, that was a...
That's home field advantage.
The final score and the tightness in that fourth quarter was about what we expected for the game. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody expected the game to start the way that it did.
Oh, a fumble?
Well, the very first play, Chris Carson fumbles, and then Green Bay just goes boom, boom, boom. Was it three plays in the end zone? And it looked like Green Bay was in control. And at the half, you're sitting there going, whoa, this game's 21-17, but it seems like Green Bay's dominating the way that the game's being played. But Seattle was right there. They kept staying right there with them. And at the end, that's that home field advantage that you talk about on Thursday night. And it was huge for the Seattle Seahawks last night as they end up pulling off a win. And as you said, to start an eliminator game, they're now 500 at 5-5, and the Pack now face an uphill climb at 4-5-1.
Just enough to get it done. And those types of wins are huge, especially when you do it at home and you do it on Thursday. Now they have a few days off and they could head into a tough stretch of games where they're going to go on the road. The Seahawks are going to go on the road. And now if you're looking at Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers is he's an unbelievable quarterback. Some of the throws he's able to do. I said it earlier in the season about his ability to throw off his back foot and the flick of his wrist. You saw Terry Bradshaw had a conniption about how it's just arm and speed and wrist, and he does. He has an elite awareness, how he can flip his hips on boot routes and get the ball in places. He just doesn't have enough playmakers. Jimmy Graham got hurt. Receivers are hurt. DBs are hurt. Offensive linemen are hurt. Where's the running game? Aaron's out there on an island all by himself, and I don't know who I would fault. I can't fault Mike McCarthy because you can't ask him to put together the personnel all the time because that's up to the GM and the president. They do that. But when every time I watch this team and I go, Green Bay is always going to be in every single game because they have Aaron Rodgers. And he just must be scratching his head saying, what do we have to do to become the best team, not only in the division, but in the conference? Because every year, Green Bay is good. They just can't find ways to win football games when it's close, when they need to. They can't win in Seattle. They can beat Seattle in Green Bay. They're 0-4. I mean, the only time he won, I think it was his second year in the league when they came and won. Mm-hmm. And beat Seattle there. Can't figure it out. But that's home field. And there were a couple mistakes. And I do agree with potentially that was, and I think this next week, too, will be the one that'll be the seal the deal for maybe Mike McCarthy, is if they lose to Minnesota, they're out of the chance. They're out of the race. They're not going to catch back up.
No.
If that does happen, we could see a change. And there might be a change in the future.
They need to. I think they kind of need one of those. This text on the Better You Today text line says, you know, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they fire him? Because if you look at, you know, it kind of is going down that Brett Favre 2.0 because he doesn't listen to Mike McCarthy, and the Packers haven't changed their offense in 10 years. New rules for offense, and they don't take advantage. 3 dang points the entire second half is atrocious. Now, that is a little bit reactionary, but I think that, you know, Packers now can say, you reset your coaching staff every couple of years. I think it's, we've had enough time. I think it's time to reset our coaching staff, period, and maybe try and make a new run at this. Do you know what I saw last night? It reminded me of that Packers offense where it's mind-numbing when they're running the football. And you mentioned the lack of playmakers due to injury. They look like Oregon's offense, where it's Devontae Adams, 12 targets, 10 catches, 166 yards. Devontae Adams is Dylan Mitchell.
Devontae Adams is just like every other. He's a very good wide receiver, but he's Randall Cobb. He's Jordy Nelson. He is all these guys that build into that system, and he's good. He's good for Green Bay because Aaron Rodgers can make you look really, really good.
But then the number two target in that offense is the running back out of the backfield, just like C.J. Verdell was in that game last week.
Check down, check down.
Exactly, and a lot of stuff is designed just to get it out to him because they know that's the only way they're getting open. And it just kind of seems like when you can't run the ball, you're just hoping that your quarterback can create enough time, and Devontae Adams or Aaron Jones, they find a way to get open and release out of the backfield or run away far enough. It kind of looks like Oregon's offense, and that's why people are frustrated in Eugene. It's the exact same reason why people are frustrated in Green Bay, because you have the quarterback, you have one great target, and then you just can't figure out how – you're not creative enough offensively to put it all together.
And let's also give credit to what Seattle did, because in the end, Green Bay made a couple of big mistakes. I thought they made a mistake by not going for it on fourth and two. If you do go for it on fourth and two, you have just over 4 minutes. I think it was, what, 4 minutes and 11 seconds? If you go for that, what's the worst case scenario? Or they do score a touchdown, that is the worst. But if you do hold them to a field goal attempt, you're still within 6 points. So you still can go down and get a touchdown. That was one of the mistakes. And for Seattle to get the football back, and Green Bay knew it. Now, the Green Bay leads the league in sacks. They're going to come after you, and they get after Russell Wilson, who, by the way, made some critical mistakes, made some really blunders of holding on to the football last night.
He was
he's a different type of guy, which is he's being told enough is don't go outside the pocket. Don't make too many mistakes. Well, holding on to the football, not throwing an interception is better by taking a sack. I understand that. But then when you needed to run the football in that four-minute offense, and they went right after him with the offensive line, as crazy as it was last night to watch, the Seahawks offensive line won the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, they did. I mean, in the most pivotal moment of the game.
That's one of the most difficult things to do is when the team knows you're going to run it. They know it. Everybody knew it. Green Bay knew they were going to run right at you and couldn't stop it. It's demoralizing, and that's really what won the football game for them is they out-physicaled them up front.
And that is the other thing, too, kind of runs that parallel to Oregon's offense. You mentioned Seattle's defense. Third down, they had 5 sacks in the game. Four of them came on third down. Mm-hmm. It was and that's kind of to the point of Green Bay knew that pressure was coming on those third downs because that Seattle brings it on third down, and they'll man up on the outside, and they still couldn't stop Seattle from doing it. And that has got to be of the utmost frustration for Aaron Rodgers. You saw it kind of boil over at times, too.
I thought it was impressive, though, for what Seattle was able to do at home, and they have stuck to their game plan as they, again, have 173 yards on the ground, go over 100 yards as a team, and Russell Wilson is comfortable. You know, he's 21 for 31. He's got 2 touchdowns. Doug Baldwin had some big catches. Yeah, there were some inexplicable throws, but nobody cares at the end of the season. It's just a W or an L. And a game like that versus a very good Green Bay team, W all day long.
I had a few buddies and I were texting back and forth last night during the game. Isn't it weird, though, how against the Packers, and one of my buddies, just diehard Seahawks fan, is like, we get so many breaks against the Green Bay Packers. From penalties and calls being overturned. It was like anytime there was a play that needed to be made, like the review on the Morse catch, where
that seemed like the biggest play of the game to me.
Yeah, where he picks up down the sideline.
But that was a catch in today's world. Even if the ball is moving, remember the NFL said, we're going to stop with that ball moving type of thing. We're going to allow football move. Possession means it's in your possession.
But usually, as Mike Prayer said, usually they just side with the officials.
Yeah.
I don't mind that it was a catch, but it's like it's those kind of plays that
the fail Mary.
And then you have the Tyler Lockett ball touch the ground. What is Mike McCarthy doing? Like, what do you
want? That was a catch also.
No, the ball hit the ground.
No, that ball was a catch.
That ball hit the ground.
That ball was a catch. I'm going to disagree with you.
How? Ball hit
because
the ground.
Because it was in his possession. I think that was a catch.
And they've said the ball can hit the ground and you can still maintain
Absolutely.
Possession, too.
That is a catch in my eyes. In your eyes, you may not think so, but I think it was a catch.
Yeah.
Just like in the booth, you had two guys picking between one. Troy Aikman thought one. Joe Buck thought it was. Mike Pereira thought it was. We're all up for interpretation. I thought that was a catch. I don't care if he goes to the ground and it hits the ground if it's in that possession. It's not like it's just out in full speed. Here's the question, though. You see that play in full speed.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. It looks like a catch.
That's how I try to judge things. I'm tired of the slow motion because it ruins – football's not played in slow motion.
Yeah, well, I know that. But I do believe that when you have replay, you should do it full speed. But I looked at that, and I was like, those are two plays that you go, whoa, okay. And Seahawks took full advantage of them. They won the football game, and that's the beauty of the game right there. 55305, Better You Today, text line. It is football Q&A day.
Ooh, get it going.
I'm a Dusty and Cam P1 shirt is coming to the best football questions that we get in the 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock hours. Right now, that's Buck with SportsCenter.
Let's get texty.
I left a message.
A message? What number did you call?
2-4-9-5-6-7-8.
I can't hear you. You're trailing off. And did I catch a niner in there? Were you calling from a walkie-talkie?
No, it was cordless.
Text us now at 55305. Message and data rates may apply.
Just want to leave my number. Anyway, I think that was weird or desperate.
This is Textual Relations on the show that likes to be over-text. Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080.
The brain of that person to actually say that?
The Fan.
Better you today, text line 55305. Football Q&A. Winner gets a I'm a P1 Dusty and Cam t-shirt. This is the point of the year when teams are making their playoff push or just mailing it in. Just curious, Cam, if you know any signs or signals that we may not know that shows that a team is quitting on the year from P1 Dustin.
That's a good question.
That is a good question. I think it goes for both sides. This is difficult, but it really is equal for both. If you're winning, you're trying to make trades and transactions to find somebody to fill in spots because you have injuries. However, watch what the Oakland Raiders are doing. And watch what a few other teams like maybe transactions, multiple transactions, and you won't see them all the time. The way you'll have to do that is you have to search through the waiver wires and you have to look at teams on the inside and see how much movement and shuffling. If they're doing a lot of shuffling with their practice squad guys, if they're doing a lot of shuffling with some of their starters, but arbitrary starters that you don't know as name guys, the types of that, that's a number one sign too, because you can see as soon as you're mathematically out of the playoffs, like mathematically out, teams will automatically start cutting veterans and they'll start moving them and shifting in and getting young players up and they'll start making a ton of transactions. That's the basic term of it. Otherwise, you're just losing the locker room and you can watch what Oakland's doing.
Okay, but what about, I mean, that one's obvious. Like, we see that one. But
not a lot of people see transactions. They don't stare and understand that. They don't know that the inner workings. Remember, 53 guys on a roster. You're only going to know, on average, maybe five guys on every team, if you're lucky.
Right, but I think like the big one is like, okay, so take, for instance, a situation like Baltimore is in right now, okay? Like, with those types of teams where it's like, okay, after this week, the season may be over, how do we kind of differentiate between those teams like and the guys that are actually playing? Not the what the franchise and the front office is doing, like, but maybe like, what if... How to signal that the players are checking out? Like, in like if Baltimore loses this week, they're just like, okay, we're done.
Losing. Yeah. That's pretty simple. I mean, there's no...
Like a magic pill.
No, there's no magic pill. Is it everybody's going to make their check? Their check's still going to come at the same time. Now, mentally, they've checked out because they believe that they can't win anymore. When you've broke your back. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a couple teams that their back is broken.
Mike Tyson. My back is broken.
And you could see it. You could see it mentally. Like Cincinnati.
Back is broken.
That's a broken team.
Denver kind of looks like it,
too. When you get hammered on by a team coming into your house, there's one sign. When you get housed by that in the NFL, there's no excuse to ever lose a game in the NFL by more than 14 points.
Okay, well, that's a good one. That's a good one right there, is getting blown out, which Denver hasn't done yet. I mean, they're still keeping games pretty close.
There's a fight. You got to have a little bit of a fight, and those teams checked out.
All right, 55305. If Leach were to go to the NFL, would the air raid work against an NFL defense? No. I'll answer that.
Okay.
No.
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 No, it wouldn't.
No.
Guys are too good.
Now
everybody's too good.
You mean a full-time air raid? No way. You have to have versatility. You cannot. If you watch what Washington State does, their offensive linemen play, I would bet 80% of their snaps in a kick mode. Like, they're always kicking pass protection.
Yes.
You can't do that. You have to play forward in the NFL. There's no way that you could line up the pass rushers against a Rams group or a pass rush, even like what Green Bay had last night, which is an excellent pass rush. There's no way in your life you could handle 80, 90 snaps like that.
Yeah, you see a lot of elements starting to come into these new wave offenses. Like, Sean McVay runs a lot of air raid elements. Mm-hmm. So does Sean Payton. But guess what both those guys predicate their offense on?
Yeah,
running the football.
The football,
too.
You have to. Running is the number one way to win in football across the world.
Okay, here we go. 55305, the Better You Today text line. Ooh, this is a question for all three of us. What was your favorite moment growing up when playing football?
Buck, did you play football growing up?
Favorite?
On the playground, baby.
Yeah, baby. All right.
Buck's mom didn't let you play football, tackle football, bro?
No, see, I was one of those weird tweener kids where I was not big enough to play the big positions and not fast enough to play the skill positions, so I stuck to baseball, basketball, and soccer.
Gosh, okay. In my area, you would have been a perfect fullback and middle linebacker.
Always got a spot for that.
Put you right in the middle.
Always got a spot for that guy.
You ain't got to be, well, you don't have to be that big. You just got to be willing to use your head as a battering ram.
What do we consider growing up? Does it have to be under the age of, because I didn't play football until I was 14 years old. So growing up, I didn't have that experience.
Through high school?
Yeah, maybe. Just really depends on what it is.
Okay. Well, that one's an easy one for me, is that my dad coached growing up. So my favorite football memories growing up was I got to travel with the team, go to every practice. My dad would come pick me up and when school got done, we'd go to practice. I went to every game, and his players would like take me on the weekends and stuff. They were college kids, going and staying with them and going on those road trips. Those are my favorite memories growing up.
Yeah.
It was like I had, you know, 80 big brothers every single fall. It was awesome.
Mine is my first ever varsity play against Anacortes Seahawks. I still remember left defensive end, just a sophomore. I had my arm guards on, bad face mask and everything. They said, get in there and play D end. The guy didn't block me, and I hit the running back for a 3-yard loss. To this day, I kid you not, it's one of the greatest feelings I've ever had. I had no idea what I was doing.
Did you flex on him?
But nobody blocked. They were trying to run power. The guard didn't pull, and I just knocked him out.
55305, a lot of thoughtful questions coming in. We'll get to them next. 644 on the Fan. Football Q&A, do it every Friday during Textual Relations. You send your text in to the Better You Today text line 55305. We'll answer him. Best one gets I'm a Dusty and Cam P1 shirt. Mario Cristobal is trying to make Oregon physical. Do you think this is because he doesn't know what else to do or because it's a really smart way to change the culture? Basically, does Mario ever win a Pac-12 championship at Oregon?
There's no way I can answer that.
Well, I don't know if he wins a Pac-12 championship.
In a way, it's kind of asking if he's like a one-trick pony, right? If this is all he knows is this power game?
Well, I think he's doing this is what every coach will do. You go back to your roots and how you were formed as a football player. Mm-hmm. It's how he learned in Miami. It's what he saw being extremely successful at Alabama. So you take the formula that you believe is the best to win and you take it to wherever you go, and that becomes your core principle. Obviously, if you do it correctly, you can win because the history of football has said physicality, running the football, and great defense is the way you win a championship.
Sure. This one is really good. I think Better You Today text line. Can you explain the differences between all styles of offense? Why do only certain ones work in the NFL and not any of the trendy college styles? It's just the speed of the game and the athletes. That's really, the West Coast system is built on having fullbacks and having triangles. I've said that before. There's always three answers in a scheme. Then you have Eric Coryell, which is a very vertical three-number style of offense, which is a vertical dig kind of offense. It does involve a lot of tight end play, but it does get seams. It does want to have things a little bit deeper. If you think of the Eric Coryell, think of The Greatest Show on Turf. That would tell you kind of that kind of system. When old dig routes were run, dig routes are 15 yards in the original. The original, they pushed them to 18.
Yeah.
It's another step. It's just things got a little bit deeper. And so that's why you had that. And if you go to college offenses, which are up-tempo, and you have the air raid, the thing is about the NFL is everybody is good. I can't run the option in the NFL because guys are too big, strong, and fast. I can't get to the outside. So you have to be able to trickery, ooh, whatever words you want to do.
Strategic.
Discipline is beyond at the NFL level. You can, in high school, I could run the wing T and be a powerhouse for 40 years.
Yes.
Why? Because high school kids are dumb and they're not disciplined yet. And they're just not that sharp.
Well, yeah. And that's the whole thing about it is that
they're not
high
disciplined.
School,
they're just not.
You can have eight dudes on the right on the same page, but wing T is successful because of those three.
And you can have one D1 player on your team. And you could run the power I or the T offense and give him the football the entire time. Yeah. And you go, we got a great scheme. No, you have a Joe.
Yeah.
They have Jims. You have one Joe. That's kind of, but everybody in the NFL is a Joe.
And that's the thing is that in high school, you could have eight, but it's the three. In college, you could have 10, but they're going to find that one guy.
Yes, they will.
In the NFL, you have none.
Yeah.
You have no guys that you can say that's our mark.
And in today's game, if you have the quarterback 20, 30 years ago, 10 years ago, isn't as critical as it is today. There was no such thing as the elite 11. There was no such thing as these quarterback clubs. The kids could be a good athlete. He could throw an occasional football, But now, if you don't have a quarterback that is somewhat competent, it's just not going to happen.
Text says, Jonathan Smith is taking on his old team this week. How much of an advantage is that for a coach playing his former team he was an assistant at? Or last night, Brett Hundley being Green Bay's backup quarterback now with Seattle. Is that a real advantage or not a big deal?
I think it's a little bit of an advantage. You have terminology, you have scheme, you have all the things you're going to be able to do. But it's not such an advantage unless you're piped into their play calls and you have their headsets. I mean, everybody runs the same kind of plays. How you put them together and the types of guys. I could know I'm running this over and over again. But if you don't have the guys, like Coach Smith does not have the dudes on defense. It wouldn't matter if you knew they were running every single time. He can tell you the scheme. You can overload. But then Jake Brown just check out of it. These are the types of things you have to deal with.
So you're saying Washington's going to cover?
I still don't think they cover. I think 32.5 is ridiculous cover.
I got a note on that. I got a note on that number.
Ridiculous amount of money.
I got an that
to
number,
bet on.
That number has changed, by the way.
Has it?
It's not 32.5.
What is it now?
I'll give it to you in a little bit here because we got good text coming in.
Oh.
You guys brought up the critical errors made by Russell Wilson last night. Others are pick six against the Chargers, fumble against the Rams, hold on to the ball a lot this season. Is Russell trying to do too much because he feels the pressure of having to make a play every down? How can he turn it around for a playoff run?
I don't think he's allowed to do too much right now. I think he's a completely different guy this year than he was last year. Remember, he led the team with just over 500 yards of rushing. He was required to do everything last year. I think this year he is being he's corralled. He's been told to stay in the pocket. He's also been told to get rid of the football. But he's still, my number one criticism of Russell Wilson has always been the same. He holds on to the ball too long. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I would say. And last night you saw he underthrew. I mean, I don't know if it's an arm strength thing. He underthrew Doug Baldwin. He underthrew Tyler Lockett on some big time throws. It just, the click and the timing wasn't there and hasn't been the last few weeks.
Well, and then early in the game, he was airmailing guys.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like he threw a couple into like row three that he was trying to throw it to the player. And you're just like, what? What's going on? There's something not
there.
That's an
offensive leadership. Like, that's a thing in the connection. But he's a 5'10 quarterback in a big man's world.
Yeah.
It's hard to get to do that. You got to find lanes. You got to slide over his arm. He got a third down ball knockdown that was huge. It was just a simple little flat route. And just got it knocked down. A guy like that, it's going to happen.
All right, one last one here for the 6 o'clock hour. P1 Zolo, the state of Oregon develops very few Division I recruits. Why do you see as the biggest deficiency in high school recruits coming out of Oregon?
Well, that one's one of the easiest questions ever. It's just...
It's a good question, though.
It is a very good question. Population.
Yep.
Genetics.
Both very good points.
I mean, we're a different kind of people here.
Yeah,
we're just different. We don't have the size of a lot of parts of the country. I mean, geographically, it's just different. It's colder here. We're more inside. You're not outside doing all these things. I mean, we're just not as physically strong as other regions. This is not a condemning what it is. It's just you're just not. You look, there's different types of positions in every parts of the country. You notice how Wisconsin always puts out big offensive linemen, and in the South is speed. East Coast, you have a lot of...
Well, it's speed and size in the South.
What it is, it's speed and size. In California, it's also quickness. It's the speed that you get. We just are up here. We don't have the genetics up here.
Well,
we don't have the interest.
And people just, it's a small pool to pull from.
It's quite small. Although you would look at... Portland, you go, well, wait a minute. There's 2 million, if you include Vancouver, just over 2 million people. How come we can't get it? Well, there's also not the kind of care and passion that you have about developing athletes in this region. They just don't have it.
Right. But, you know, we look at states like Georgia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, Texas, California. Those states produce more talent than anybody else. Their populations are also way larger than these states. Oregon is actually pretty much... on pace with all the other ones, if you look at number of Division I recruits per, you know...
per size.
Per 1,000 people or whatever, mm-hmm. you know? So it is pretty small in that regard of the pool that you're pulling from.
Yeah. And the more that everybody... and the more popular Oregon gets, which it is, because a lot of people are moving and growing and they're coming here, you're going to have more families and more generations that are going to be here, and there's going to be an uptick. That.
All right, our first P1 shirt of the day will be given out next, plus hot and cool. Coming up next hour, Joel Klatt, Fox College football analyst, will join us on the Catlin Capital Hotline at 7:30. Dustin Cam on the Fan.